Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, Bitcoin. We'll hear about the anonymous electronic tender that's evolved from libertarian statement to coffee shop currency. Also today, the author of a book on compulsive gambling argues against the state-by-state scramble for casino licenses. And Lake People, a New Hampshire novelist, dips under the placid surface of a small lakeside town. But we begin with the bursting of the law bubble. The U.S. has been lawyering up in a big way since the late 1980s. Competition among institutions offering degrees has been on a steady climb since then, along with tuitions. Stephen J. Harper submits that we are approaching a glut. Last year, American law schools graduated 68,000 students for only about 25,000 new jobs requiring a law degree. Harper teaches law at Northwestern University. In a book out this month, he argues that an obsession with profits has tarnished the prestige of the profession, and like the real estate and financial bubbles, law is heading for a fall. Stephen J. Harper, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks very much. Thanks for inviting me.
So, tracing the swell of the law school bubble, a couple of watershed moments. First, what happened in 1987?
U.S. News started publishing the first ever law school rankings. Initially, it was only a list of 20 schools. By the early 90s, they were publishing a more complete list. And now, regrettably, it's become, you know, it's fed into what has become a pervasive cultural phenomenon, which is this obsession with a short-term metric by which we can then define success and failure. And what could be more appealing than a singular ranking, which is what the U.S. News law school rankings, much like the college rankings are. The law school rankings are particularly problematic because they encourage behavior that is, shall we say, counterproductive in terms of the formation of what you correctly call the lawyer bubble.
Mm. So it made a huge jump in the number of law schools and in tuition. Any data on how much of an increase since 1987?
Sure. In just to give you an example on tuition, in 1985, the average private tuition for law school was about $7,400 a year. Last year, it was over $40,000, a 400% increase. If you want to draw a comparative number, back in those days, back in the 80s, medical school was a lot more expensive than law school, but those curves have now intersected, and law school now outpaces tuition at medical school in most universities. If you look at the numbers, you know, up until the early 1990s, we were enrolling, again, for total enrollments for all 3 years, about 120,000 students. Now we're up to 145,000, and we graduate 45,000 students a year for, as you correctly know, legal jobs for about half of them.
Mm. You know, anecdotally, I know many people who've been in educational or career skids and thought, okay, I'm going to borrow some easy money, go to law school, make lots of money. How likely is a law student to get a lucrative job in a big firm today?
Fewer than 10% of the, and you hit the other piece of the problem too. It's not fair to blame U.S. News for the entire problem, although they're a giant contributor to it. The other is the very kind of mentality that you just described. About 10% of law school graduates wind up getting jobs in the lucrative firms that pay six figures. Everybody else, you know, the median salary for law graduates generally has been dropping dramatically. Now it's down to about $60,000, which is still a lot of money. But these students, 85% of them are graduating with debt loads that exceed $100,000. Mm-hmm. So you got a home mortgage without a house. And one of the things that is fueling all that is federally subsidized loan money, which students cannot discharge in bankruptcy, and which the federal government stands behind if they default. So at the end of the day, the federal treasury could wind up paying a pretty big chunk of this bill.
So it sounds like law schools are able to still lure students in without job placement numbers to support those degrees. Anyone offering a counter-narrative to that idealistic undergraduates? I mean, where's the American Bar Association on this?
That's a really good question. The American Bar Association has been accrediting a new law school every year on average over the last 10 or 15 years, even at the same time that that projections of the demand for lawyers, that is the anticipated projected number of new jobs for graduates, continues to decline. So that, just as an example, the U.S. Census recently downgraded, if you will, or down-estimated the number of new law positions that it expected to have over the next decade by about 20,000. So that when you take into account attrition, of the 44,000 graduates every year, there'll be legal jobs for maybe 20 to 25,000 of them. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that that's happened, though, is because, well, there are two things. One, all of us try to navigate through life with what psychologists refer to as confirmation bias. You know, we embrace data that reinforces our view of the world, and we jettison facts that don't. Well, feeding into that confirmation bias for years, indeed until the class of 2001 reported employment statistics last year, law schools were allowed to count graduates as employed if they were part-time, if they were greeters at Walmart, if they were baristas at Starbucks. It didn't require a legal job, so that someone looking at it, an undergraduate, for example, looking at the situation and saying, gee whiz, the economy is really terrible, where can I get a job, would have seen employment statistics on average. And again, this is back to the ABA, because they allowed this kind of reporting where overall all graduates' employment rates, so-called employment rates, were in excess of 90%. Well, the reality was that only about half of those students, new graduates, had long-term, full-time positions that required a legal degree.
We're talking about the steady surge of people getting law degrees over the past three decades. Stephen Harper teaches a law at Northwestern University and argues in a forthcoming book that we're approaching a glut. His book is called The Lawyer Bubble, A Profession in Crisis. And the profession itself, once people become practicing lawyers, found high rates of alcoholism, depression, substance abuse. Many who are practicing law saying that they wouldn't recommend other people to practice. So back to this bubble model, you have insularity, regulators too much on the inside, profits driving decisions. What do you do about a lawyer bubble, though, Professor Harper? There's little motivation for those making money off the system to change.
Well, that's the real problem. The embedded interests are very strong. And what you alluded to is really part two of my book, which is what's happening at what should be the guiding lights of the profession, namely the nation's largest and most preeminent law firms, where, as I mentioned, 10 to 15% of graduates wind up getting jobs. The problem there is an analogous difficulty to what's happened at law schools. Again, it's the short-term metrics problem that we as a culture seem to be just riddled with. And in the case of large law firms, the metric has been profits per partner. So the prevailing business model, and that's the other thing that's happened. You know, we've imported business school type metrics into what has always been a professional model of practice, and the result of that is a myopic focus on this year's profits. And the difficulty is you can measure some things, but sometimes values that are more important that go to things like long-term stability and well-being are not susceptible to that kind of a metric.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us, Stephen Harper, adjunct professor at Northwestern University. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much for your time. I enjoyed it.
Now, please stay with us for some legal tender that's made the jump from hackers and gun dealers to corner cafes here in New Hampshire. We're going to talk about the electronic currency known as Bitcoin when Word of Mouth continues.